Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
The Commanders might be upset at the city council, if you believe the words of the mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser. I'm going to read from Pro Football Talk, Danny, and then want to see where you come in on this. The deal between the Commanders and D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser was the beginning, not the end. And the agreement to build a new Commander stadium in D.C. potentially could evaporate. This is from over the weekend. As explained earlier this week by Eric Fisher of Front Office Sports, the arrangement requires preliminary approval from the D.C. Council, which we know they've got this deadline for July 15th. At that point, the team can talk to other jurisdictions about building a stadium. So as of July 16th, 1 month from today, exactly 1 month through the day, the Commanders can go back to Maryland. The exclusive negotiating window that D.C. and Bowser secured was only through 1 month from now. Florio goes on to write, that would open the door for Maryland and Virginia to negotiate with the team. Quote, a delay sacrifices our exclusive seat at the table and $2.7 billion in private investment, Bowser said. The Commanders and my team are ready to iron out the details with the council and respond to any concerns. It should be clear. But let me emphasize, if the council strips the deal, terms, or budgeted dollars from the budget, it kills our agreement with the Commanders. The Commanders hope to open the stadium by 2030. Bowser, according to at least one report cited here, said the team is outraged by the situation. She also said, I think they feel blindsided by the discussion, and it's not even close to characterize their reaction as furious. So I guess it's a who's who, like, you know, go whichever way you want with the reporting. This is, you know, WTOP News. Could DC's deal for a new Commander Stadium be in jeopardy? And they're quoting her as saying that the team is outraged. Now, I have not heard any of that. I find that hard to believe. When I think of Josh Harris and Mitch Rails and these guys, I don't really think outrage. But I guess my question is all of this part of the negotiation and the posturing? Or is this a problem? Like, is this actually not going well, or is everyone just doing what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, I think the answer is a little bit of both. Now, these are smart. You mentioned Harris, Rails, and company. Magic Johnson, go down the list. The lobbyists, whose names we don't know, probably never will. These people are not stupid. They have been around the block. They understand how all this works. You hire somebody to do the advocacy work that they did to help win over Congress, win over the Senate, to get D.C. control of the land. Then you hire these same people to go about these jobs, to pull the strings, grease the wheels, and do everything that needs to be done in order to get the deal that you want. The idea that they'd be blindsided, they're taken aback. They're very, very furious at no, they're not. They're fine. They understand. They know what this is. They know that there's bluster. They know that everybody's going to be, and they'll pass that up the chain. This is part of it is normal. That doesn't mean it's a slam dunk and a done deal. You see what I'm saying? Like, both are true. I guarantee you, if you gave Truth Serum to Josh Harris, Mitch Rails, and everybody in between, they'd be fully aware and understanding Will there be nothing but smooth sailing and a unanimous vote and everyone's super excited about everything that you proposed? Of course not. We knew this is going to be a pain in the butt.
I want to clarify something really quickly that I just read from Pro Football Talk that looks like it's wrong because I'm looking at another quote here. It didn't make sense to me. So they quoted Bowser as saying the team is outraged and then also quoted her as saying it's not even close to characterize the reaction as furious. That's a Mendelsohn quote. So this is the back and forth here. Because when I read it, it didn't make sense. In response to the council's uncertainty, Bowser said the team is, quote, outraged. I think they feel blindsided by the discussion, end quote. Mendelsohn, who's on the other side of this, saying, I'm not telling you no. I'm not telling you we're not going to get a deal, but we're not doing this deal by July 16th, essentially. He says it's not even close to characterize their reaction as furious. So Bowser's saying they're livid. He's saying, I'm talking to them. They're not that mad. It's okay. Who do you believe here? I actually tend to believe Mendelsohn a little bit more, and I think Bowser maybe publicly is suggesting that they're... Now, are they happy? Probably not.
Right.
But outrage, that feels like you're walking into the city council and turning a desk over and screaming at people. I have a hard time believing they're that upset right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I think, and I'm not poking fun, I'm just trying to draw the comparison. I think Bowser was outraged when that press conference happened with Leontis and company, and then she went in and like flipped the table or whatever the hell it was, like the next day.
She barged into Monumental Sports and basically said, let's talk.
Right.
The day after Ted was in Virginia to press her.
I think that was outrage. I think this is, she's doing what she's supposed to do, advocacy, trying to put the screws to the council, trying to exert the right pressure, using the political levers and the whole thing. So again, I always go back to what happens on July 17th. 15th is the deadline. What about July 20th? If an agreement's reached, what about July 30th? What about
not reached?
Yeah, or no, I'm saying if it's not reached on the 15th, but it is on the 18th.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
are we fine?
Yeah.
Or are we not fine?
Like, I'm sure we're fine then, but if it's not reached on the 15th, it's not being reached anytime soon.
You wouldn't think, but again, if the talks are promising, not that what we hear about outrage and otherwise,
well, right
the big
now,
song and dances.
There seems to be no talks, by the way.
Well, they're sitting in a room debating something, elements of the budget
the
or otherwise.
The council is still debating those, but I'm saying the team and the council aren't talking, and the council, at least three of the members have told us, we need concessions, which means at some point they need to talk to the team. They can't even do that until they figure out what they're doing in their own budget.
Totally. I guess my point is there is a process that has to play out that We're looking at 1/1000th of this budget because it's the thing that we care about for our little sports show. But they're doing the whole process. And if they won't be rushed, they won't be rushed. Like, if there's anything promising happening, if they're, you know, behind the scenes, again, the hired lobbyists and the advocates and the people that are doing this professionally, making so much money, it would make your ears bleed if you heard the number. They're sitting there, plugged into the process, know exactly what's going on, are briefing the football team. Nobody's operating in the dark. It's not like you get a phone call at the end of the day going, yeah, they didn't discuss nothing. My source in the room says they're not talking about it. Everybody knows exactly what's going on.
But the problem is they're talking past each other because the council is viewing this as an opening offer. Like, it's very, very different if Odyssey comes to Danny Ruye with a contract offer, and in their mind, they go, this is perfectly fair for you. This is your offer that you're getting from us. And you go, that's not the worst first offer I've ever seen. I don't mind that. Now, I'm going to send you 10 changes with my agent to this contract offer. The money's going to be way higher. The vacation's going to look a lot different. You know, you go into all the specifics, right? That's what's happening right now. The team has made the offer that the mayor is telling them, this is the offer. It's not an offer. It's not a first offer. It's the offer. And then you got this quote from Mendelsohn, who's in charge of the city council, who said, the council will move forward quickly to analyze the mayor's terms, improve the deal where possible for taxpayers, and approve a new football stadium. Any suggestions to the contrary are simply false. So you could take that one of two ways. He's saying, I actually am positive about the fact, and I like the fact that he's saying the council will move forward quickly to approve a new football stadium. That's all in that sentence. But the middle part there is to change a lot of the things we don't like and give it approval. Well, that doesn't mean that the team will sign off on that deal. So I still think it's a game of chicken. Now, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but the team really has not said anything publicly.
Right.
Is that interesting to you?
Very much so.
They had the press conference. They put the deal out there. The city council is doing interviews, answering questions. The mayor's been incredibly public. At one point, calling in on our listener line to the 800 number to talk when we were talking on the show that she overheard and talk to what we were speaking to on a segment. The team has from a public standpoint, not to my knowledge, addressed this really other than a, you know, one or two comments about how great the stadium will eventually be from Mark Ein when he was, you know, promoting his tennis event or what have you.
Yeah, and I think they realize they're in a good place in that regard. They've got a public advocate whose job is public. They don't need to do a whole lot. They don't need to do a lot of trumpeting.
Meaning because, the mayor's doing the work for
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And others. I mean, there are people that are championing this thing, right, for on their behalf. They don't really have to do anything. When you have to go out and do it yourself, you got your own PR, and then you open yourself up for shots and whatever. If they just sit there silently, there's no obligation for them to kind of get the ball rolling.
But would it hurt for Harris to kind of play politics and go, I mean, door-to-door is not literal, but, you know, go try to speak about this? I guess there's nothing to be...
I think it might, because there's nothing to be gained. Again, when you offer public comment on something like this, you open yourself up to whatever kind of scrutiny. So now a reporter can go, hey, how come you guys are paying a dollar in rent for the next 30 years instead of the market value of the ground?
But he could have a good answer for that.
Sure, but it's not as good as a no answer at all and never talking about it because you've got public advocates. To me, the best.
That's not exactly true because...
Fair enough. I don't know if he's got a counter.
Right.
But like to me, like there's you don't want to get... I don't want to get in those. I don't want to get in those like arguing with advocates or one way or the other, et cetera. To me, this is you've got plenty of people in your corner. You've already made your views known. You're also giving away leverage potentially if you start saying it's got to be this, because you're going hell bent and doing a campaign to try to make to win over the hearts and minds of folks in D.C. That's really at the end of the day. What's most important to me about this is if this takes an extra 2 months, 5 months, I don't know what the drop dead point is. An extra year, they know Virginia's a non-starter, and it's still to them, I think, so much better than the alternative. They're just going to deal with it, I think, because of they have their heart set on this.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Let's talk to our pal Logan Paulson on Grant and Danny. Nobody smarter in town breaking down the X's and the O's than Logan. It's been too long, brother. How are you?
Yeah, I was about to say, man, it's been a minute since I've been on here, so it's really nice to catch up. Thanks for being patient with me, and it's always a pleasure being on the show.
Yeah, buddy.
Oh, no worries, dude. No, you're busy, and you got a lot going on. I wanted to talk minicamp with you and some of the guys that stood out, but before we even get to that, what would you say to people who talk about minicamp not being important? You know, what's your take on we had the big dialogue, whether it was, you know, Marshawn Lattimore, Laremy Tunsil, whoever skipping, and we got everything from people calling in saying this is the least important thing ever to there's a lot going on that's significant. Like, you were in the league, you were at everything. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so I think it depends on who you are. Like, for Logan Paulson, between 2010 and 2019, a guy who's fighting for that 53rd roster spot, you know, minicamp is the thing, man. I told people all the time I used to practice, and every single OTA, minicamp, helmets, shoulder pads, whatever we were wearing, like, it was a game. I'd go full speed in a walkthrough. Like, that was just the expectation, and that's what I knew I had to do in order to kind of show that I was bought in enough to make the team. And, you know, my standard and the standard for that 53rd guy is not the same standard for Trent Williams, as an example. You know, I think in 2015, he didn't come to OTAs. I think he came to mandatory minicamp, but he didn't come to OTAs. And, like, Trent came in and looked like Trent and was still the best left tackle in football without OTA, with or without OTAs. So I think it depends on where you're at in the roster. It depends on what the coaches have to see from you. I think I've been a part of teams where guys have thought they were Trent Williams, and they weren't, and they end up getting cut during training camp. And I've been places where guys, you know, who are Trent Williams come and get a lot of work out. Like, I think, you know, Zach was at OTAs, Bobby Wagner's at OTAs, two guys that are going to be in contention for the Hall of Fame. So whatever your process is to get you ready for week one, and the coaching staff is willing to work with you in terms of flexibility and your availability, do what you think is best, but understand that not all players in the NFL are created equal.
Logan, what did you see at minicamp, just from this offense and just, you know, maybe new wrinkles, new ideas, new designs, new things, new toys for Jaden Daniels, his evolution? Just give me a 30,000 foot view of the offense.
Yeah, you know, the offense is always fun to watch when Jaden Daniels at the helm. It was so funny getting back to watch OTAs and obviously minicamp and just remembering how good he is at football, like how sharp the ball comes out of his hand, how decisive he is with his reads, how quick he is with his progressions. For such a young football player, I'm just always impressed with that. You know, obviously seeing Debo out there was nice, kind of just general utilization package, some work from the slot, some reverse stuff, you know, just kind of, I really think they haven't made any decisions about how they're best going to utilize them, but I think they're kind of exploring what they think that package with Debo could be and what it could look like and how it could help the offense. So, you know, I think the tight end room is always interesting. You know, Zach Ertz, like I mentioned, man, for a guy who's 34 years old and, you know, going to put a yellow jacket on here potentially, like, for him to be out there looking as good and as sharp as he did in OTAs and minicamp is always impressive and always a testament to his work ethic. So I think there's a lot of positive things. You know, minicamp OTAs are always, to me, a little bit of experimental. I think they're really important for the guys that a lot of fans don't know about, you know, the fifth tight end, the third running back, the sixth wide receiver, whatever that is. And so those guys are guys that tend to watch during this phase. But from an offensive standpoint, when you got a quarterback like Jaden Daniels, it's always going to look pretty sharp.
Logan Paulson on Grant and Danny. What jump could Jaden Daniels make, and do you expect Jaden Daniels to make this year, year one to year two? I remember one of your coaches who meant a lot to your career, Mike Shanahan, once told me, the year one to year two growth of a quarterback is the most important of any developmental phase they're ever going to have.
Yeah, and I would agree with Mike. You know, he's done it for a long time, or did it for a long time, and has coached some of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history, like John Elway, for example. So I would defer to him on that. But, yeah, I think so. I think one of the things about Jaden is he was so good last year. In my opinion, there's not a lot of space for him to improve. And so because he's done such a good job and been such a good pro in year one, like, the areas that I immediately go to is, like, can this – and it's really an offensive – kind of identity thing, which I think could be affected by the new additions of Laremy Tunsil and Josh Connerly and moving Coleman to guard, like increasing the efficiency of that offensive line. But kind of can the intermediate passing attack, kind of that 12 to 18-yard range of the field, like open up a little for this offense? You know, they were 24th last year in explosive offensive big plays, third in plays over 50 yards. So there was this kind of like, we're not super explosive until we're crazy explosive. And so finding a level of consistency in that kind of middle of the field, mid-range target, kind of getting some explosive plays off of those easier, higher completion percentage opportunities, I think is going to be extremely important. So that's kind of an area I'd look at for him. And so what does that entail? That, you know, he's getting a little bit more comfortable in the pocket, getting a little bit more patient, throwing to space at a higher level. And not that he did any of those things poorly last year, but we're talking like going from a B-plus to an A-minus, right? The margins of improvement are so small for a guy that's as talented as Jaden Daniels. But in terms of the offense, in terms of areas that he can get better, though that area specifically is something that I think is extremely critical and I'd like to see him improve on. And we'll see how that looks in training camp.
Logan Paulson with us here on Grant and Danny. What about the running game? Despite having Jaden Daniels and his electric ability with the football in his hands, usually you see what happens to Derrick Henry. Usually what happens to Saquon Barkley, right? Where you have good running threats next to them and they go for, you know, 2,000 yards or more. Wasn't the case last year with this running game. What did you see from it last year and how do you think it improves this year? Thinking about the running back version of the running game, not the Daniels part.
Sure. You know, even with running back runs, I think they were 10th in the NFL, maybe 8th. I don't remember exactly, but in that kind of top 10 range. So it wasn't bad. I think people were expecting, you know, a little bit more efficiency from that department. And I think comparing this running game to what they did in Philly and what they did in Baltimore with Derrick Henry is a little bit unfair. Like those runs that they deployed with that group were not predicated off quarterback runs necessarily. So obviously Lamar runs the football, but if you look at Derrick Henry's most efficient runs, they're out of like 22 personnel running like power, counter, trap, kind of this more traditional from the dot downhill runs. Saquon Barkley, same thing. It's not like you saw a lot of zone read or RPO from Jalen Hurts last year. Did they do it? Yeah, but was it a huge characteristic of their offense? No. So that being said, one of the things I think about this offense is when you deploy the quarterback running game the way the Commanders, deployed the quarterback running game, you're going to see a little bit less efficiency from the running backs because they're going to be running into what I would characterize as less efficient looks, right? You're relying on the quarterback's ability to run to block an unblocked player in the defense. You're relying on the quarterback's ability to make a decision on an RPO defender to block that guy. If you misread it or if it's a bad look or if it's a weird look on the RPO, you got to hand it off and there's going to be an unblocked dude in the hole. So I think understanding kind of, yes, the quarterback run game elevated the floor of this offense tremendously. I think it's also important to understand that it's going to hurt the running back on those runs because you're not going to always maximize those looks. So that's kind of what I would point to and say, you know, this year with the improvement of the offensive line, I expect that group to be significantly better. I think they'll be able to run more of those kind of traditional everybody's blocked up type runs. I think that was a big part of their offense last year that was very successful. So that's something I'm going to keep an eye on and see if that matures and develops. And also I think as Jaden Daniels gets more comfortable in the offense, he's going to make more efficient decisions, which is crazy to say because he was so good at that last year. But I think all those things kind of factor into my belief that they're going to be much better on the football in 2025.
Logan Paulson on Grant and Danny. So let's talk O-line for a second. Specifically, I'm looking for thoughts on what you saw from Josh Connerly in a limited sample, and then also the move of Brandon Coleman, Dan Quinn saying to left guard officially. Like, what you think his game translate to looking like there?
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with Josh Connerly. He's a guy that, I mean, his athleticism just pops. Like, you know, they're not doing a ton of teamwork. I think, you know, in the couple days I was there for minicamp, I think they had two team periods, which he's in on. I think you see a guy that can just move so well in space. You know, you see the athletic profile, you see the bend, you see the length. I think you see also a guy who's a young football player. You know, he's only 21 years old, so you see some kind of baby deer moments, like I'm a little tight on my set, I'm a little wide on my set, but anybody who's been around football for a long period of time knows that young offensive linemen, to me, from college to the NFL is a significantly bigger jump than, you know, high school to college, for example. Like, it just gets way more technical, guys are stronger, faster, and so kind of honing in on some of those skills are things that he's going to have to work on, you know, heading through training camp and probably through the first half of the year. But he's a guy that, man, I'm tremendously excited about because, like, when you look at guys that could be a starting right tackle in last year's draft, like, he was one of four guys that fell into that bucket. So I feel really fortunate that the Commanders were able to grab him when they did. Now, Brandon Coleman moving a guard, left guard specifically, when he came out, which was 2 years ago now, I had him evaluated as a guard, and I think I will give Adam Peters a lot of credit in terms of looking at his length, 35-inch arms, his athleticism. He ran a 4.9 40. I think he had over a 34-inch vertical, if I'm not mistaken, which is a great metric for offensive linemen, specifically at tackle. So I love that they were able to work him in at tackle last year and kind of provide some position flexibility. But when I watched him just from like a bend movement standpoint, I always thought he would be a good tackle, but I think he could be a great guard, much like Sam Cosmi, right? I think he kind of fell in that same bucket. Like, I think Sam Cosmi could have survived a tackle, but now you've got a guy who's borderline Pro Bowl player. I think Brandon Coleman, because of the athletic profile, because of the length, falls in that guy that could be a special guard. You've got to figure some stuff out. It's a new position, new techniques, or changes, shifts in techniques, let's say that. But I'm really excited for both those guys because I think the offensive line just got so much more athletic. And I think, guys like Allegretti and Wiley being in those swing backup roles, again, just makes this group so much more dynamic.
Look, your receiver position. McLaurin pretty much on one side. After that, Deebo Samuel, I think, is going to line up in 77,000 different places, which I'm excited about. I love that. Like, I literally can't wait for that. I'm so excited to see how it gets deployed. But your second receiver, and I put that in kind of quotation marks, because there's other options in the pass game, be it Ertz, be it Sinnott, be it Eckler out of the backfield, Brian Robinson, Deebo Samuel, et cetera. But that receiver position opposite Terry McLaurin, how do you see it with Jalen Lane, with Gallup, with McCaffrey in year two? Like, how does that position shake out to you?
Well, really, the guy that stuck out to me probably most demonstratively was Brown, man. He looked outstanding, I thought, through OTAs and obviously the first day of minicamp. Obviously, there's the injury and we don't know his status. But he's a guy that, to me, started having shades of kind of a true number two kind of playmaking weapon in terms of his body type and stuff. So now, obviously, I don't know anything about the injury. Wish him speedy recovery, whether it's long, short, whatever that looks like. But another guy that had a great OTA period and minicamp period, I thought, was Luke McCaffrey. Like, it was really impressive to watch him kind of develop that receiver nuance. Like, he's a good athlete for a guy of his size. Runs fast, got great change in direction metrics, great decelerator. But it doesn't always show up when he runs route because I think he lacks some of the artistry, like the ability to accent certain routes and certain things that he does in terms of stems, indicators, what he does at the top of the route. And I think in this minicamp and OTA period, you saw him starting to do that. Now, it's not as good as, Terry McLaurin, for example, or Deebo Samuel, but I think a guy that's developing that skill set is always a valuable asset to the roster. So love that. And then Gallup, I think there's times where you see the guy that he was a couple years ago, but I also felt there were times where he was kind of getting his legs back under him. He didn't participate in minicamp. I think he was dealing with a hamstring injury, if I'm not mistaken. But in OTAs, like, he can move, he catches the ball well, he tracks the football well. But I think, take a year off football, you got to get kind of reconditioned to the game. So I do think it's an interesting conversation outside of Terry and Deebo, like what that role looks like, especially with Brown's injury kind of calling the position into question. But I do think if you're a fan of the Commanders, and improve Luke McCaffrey is something to be excited about.
Logan, where are you on Ben Sinnott? He was drafted just outside of the top 50, and he was almost irrelevant last season. Ertz stays healthy. That's a good thing, right? I mean, he's on the field making plays. I feel like if he wasn't healthy, then Sinnott might be able to show what he's got, but how do they get both at the same time on the field and helping?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do that because I think, it's not only that he's negotiating with Zach Ertz, he's negotiating John Bates too. And John Bates is, one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL who's not too bad catching the football. So you have, again, a guy who's going to be borderline Hall of Famer in Zach Ertz, one of the best blocking tight ends in football. It's a tough room to kind of crack, especially because of what I would, from my observation, the professionalism of that room. Like, you can tell those guys study and they prepare and they are true pros. So I think what I would like to see is, like, obviously Ben is a physical freak. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's fast, he's strong, he's not afraid of contact. It's just, can you add a little bit of detail to the work? Like, when I'm watching film sometimes from last year, I'm kind of like, is this where you're supposed to be? Is this the spacing? Is this the depth of this route? Is this where your hat's supposed to be on this block? And that's very common for young football players, but I'd like to see that become a little bit more consistent, obviously. And again, like, I think in OTAs and minicamp, he started showing signs of that. You see the athlete, you see him able and some red zone periods during minicamp to kind of get open, create some separation. That's always really exciting. But can he continue to stack days, continue to be a pro, continue to develop the process, and continue to learn from those guys that are ahead of him? And I think if he can, like, getting them on the field will be a will be something that'll be tough to deal with, because it's like, who are you going to take off? You take receivers off, you take running backs off. But I think it's a good problem to have a guy of his athletic profile that can contribute at a high level to this offense.
Logan, you mentioned a few guys you've just gone through, people that that stood out to you. Give me some other names, just to general, offense, defense, anywhere that you kind of said, okay, and you kind of made a note to yourself, that guy looked pretty special, or better than you thought, or, you know, kind of stood out to you in any way.
Sure, obviously I'm offensive biased, so all my guys at the start were offensive players, which is my bad. Sorry, defense.
Don't you dare apologize to us, Logan Paulson.
Yeah, Daron Payne, I thought, had an excellent – he looked in excellent shape. And I know Coach gave him a shout-out during his presser a couple weeks ago. But there was a play that I remember definitively where he, like – it was a fake run to the defensive right. He ran it down. It was a boot. He ran the quarterback down. The quarterback threw the ball. Then he pursued the football, you know, 15 or 20 yards down the field. And I'm like, man, that guy looks like that freaky first-round player that, you know, we saw a couple years ago, and that he's been, but, you know, we just don't always see that level of conditioning from those interior players. So that was really cool. I mean, Kinlaw looks like an absolute freak. I mean, I don't think I only saw him do warm-ups like on the second day of OTAs, but holy cow, man, if you're going to central casting for like freaky football player body type, like, it's definitely him. Trey Amos, I thought, had an excellent OTA period, like in terms of getting hands on guys, playing the football, like the ball skills, which were touted so heavily during the draft process, were fully on display. Love to see that. Some of the young linebackers, which I'm not saying any of these guys are going to make the team, but like Hamilton, Medrano, McGee, like that group is a fun group to watch because they're young, they're fast, they're long, and it's an interesting dynamic to think about them kind of developing over the course of the season. But yeah, those were some really interesting guys. Obviously, Mike Sangristola is a pro's pro and moving all around the formation. Another guy was Harris, Will Harris, I think is his name, from
the safety
New Orleans.
From the Saints, yeah.
Yeah, he did a great job of like, hey, I'm the nickel this play, I'm a safety this play, or I'm, you know, in the safety look, but I'm going to rotate to the post. And just the flexibility that he gave from a defensive perspective, I was incredibly impressed with. So a lot of guys on the defense side of the football, but again, it's so early to kind of make any declarative games, statements about them, but I thought there was a lot of dudes that were very impressive.
Last one for me, you mentioned Kinlaw, who's massive. Eddie Goldman's a huge guy as well. Am I onto something when I say they go get those guys as beef, basically, and then Newton and Payne can get up the field a little bit, maybe, but the idea would be that they got to stop the run better? Because, like, Kinlaw's never rushed the quarterback well. Goldman, it's been many, many years. It seems to me like size and maybe run stuffing was a priority. Is that a thing?
I think that's for sure a thing. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with Kinlaw, because I think when you watch his highlights or when you watch his explosive plays, man, he's disruptive. When he gets a good bull rush going, man, I don't know how many guards in the NFL can stop that. So I think about harnessing that, putting a package out there with him, Daron, Drazon, you know, I think that could be pretty devastating. But I do think, obviously, in terms of the interior players, I think finding up someone who can play that true nose in Goldman is extremely important, because then it frees up Daron to play that three technique. And that three technique can be so disruptive in this defense. And he's that guy. And we've seen him at points when John wasn't healthy or not here or unavailable, like how disruptive he can be playing that three. So that's something I'm really excited about. And again, Goldman's addition elevates Payne here. And so, but I think to your main point, that the addition of like Dietrich Wise, the re-signing of Holmes, like these bigger defensive ends also kind of shows, hey, we need to be better here on first down. And how do we do that? We get a little bit bigger, but I think maybe more nuanced than that is you get guys who are good at stopping the run. Like Dietrich Wise is excellent at that, right? Goldman is excellent at that. And I think Daron over the course of his career has been very good at that, right? So getting guys who are going to do what they're supposed to do, funnel the football back to Bobby, take good angles, set good edges, set those second level defenders up to make good tackles, be better on first down. So you get second and longs, you get third and longs. We can bring those exotic blitz packages. We can play more man-to-man coverage on the perimeter. I think that's exactly what they're looking for. And again, it all stems from kind of getting the right types of bodies in the roles to maximize your efficiency on first down, I would say.
Logan, excellent with us as always. You have earned bone broth, mung beans, kale, and one full carrot. Well done, buddy. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh, man. Yeah. It's a party tonight, babe.
Yeah, babe.
Hey, carrot, Logan.
Full carrot.
Let's go.
That's very rare. That's never been doled out before.
Go
one
crazy
carrot
at the Paulson house. See you, buddy.
All right, boys. Thank you.
See you,
be good. There's Logan Paulson. You see why we love having him on. We always get smarter.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
But that brings us to the Nationals. We don't often start the show with the Nationals. But when we do, something's either going very well,
yeah,
or something's going very poorly.
It's that one.
It's not the well one. They have lost 8 straight games, and they are now 2-11 in the month of June. 2-11. They have fallen to 11 under 500. They're in trouble. Butts are warm over there. Seats are hot. I'm frankly surprised there wasn't some type of major change made this weekend. And that doesn't mean Davey Martinez getting fired. He's the biggest name in the manager. That's the one everybody talks about. But I would have thought you would have just kind of thrown a member of the staff to the Wolves, made some type of shift. The changes they decided to make after getting swept by the Marlins.
Their first sweep of the year, by the way. Congrats to the Marlins.
Who just got swept by the Rockies, who were in town for 4 games, thank God, tonight. Although you say thank God until they come out and beat you. But the Rockies are the worst team. I'm not exaggerating. Listen to what I'm about to say. They're the worst team through 71 games since 1899.
Worse than the White Sox last year, by the way, who looked like they were trying to set a record.
Not even close.
Yeah.
They're the worst team this deep into the season since 1899. So you get four games against them. So if you're going to make changes, now's the time to do it. If you're going to call a team meeting, now's the time to do it. If you're going to make a shift, now's the time to do it. And it's why I probably would have decided, if I'm Davey Martinez, which member of my staff is the least helpful. You're getting thrown to the wolves right here and right now. But he decided not to. He's going to go down with the ship, and that's fine if he wants to do that. But I would not want to be him, and I would not want to be anybody on that coaching staff if they have a bad series against Colorado. And by the way, I'm talking about, you know, if you get swept by the Rockies, then I think it's utter destruction over there. Like, we won't be able to recognize anybody when the dust settles. I think if it's losing 3 out of 4, there will be some significant changes. If they split with the Rockies, now we're in a no man's land. But I would still think at that point, you've probably got to do something maybe smaller than larger. But this needs to be 3 out of 4. A sweep would be exactly what the doctor ordered, and everyone would calm down for a little bit and the temperature would lower. But they have to win 3 out of 4 in this series. They're calling up Brady House tonight to make his much-anticipated debut. That's exciting. That's fun. That's a bit of a distraction. It's also time. It's been time for a few weeks. So that's cool. But Danny, he joins a team that is falling apart.
Yeah.
The wheels are off the wagon right now.
And you look at some of the numbers, they're alarming. Their two wins this month are both 2-0 wins. The offense is broken. There's a 9-run outburst and a loss here of late, but it's very small numbers. It's like a lot of binary code, a lot of ones and zeros.
Other than that 9-run game, they are averaging under 2 runs this month per game.
So what I've been thinking about this a lot over the last couple of days. People now are reaching out to me, just, you know, friends I haven't talked to in a while, neighbors, you know, other parents or whatever, kids I used to coach, you know, who are fed up watching this team from afar. It lets you know that something's amiss. The fan base is restless and irritated and angry. And you get into this chair, I don't want to speak for you, but for me, I'm still a fan at heart. Right? Your fandom changes when you do what we do every day. Your fortunes are tied to the fortunes of these teams. And there are blissful moments. There's incredible moments. Parades. The Caps winning the Stanley Cup. The 12-5 season this year for the football group. The Nats winning the World Series in 2019, etc. There are still moments as when you're just a fan, though, and you're so angry. You're so pissed off. You're so let down. That what you need, frankly, as a fan, it's why fans shouldn't be in charge of this thing, but it's what you need as a fan is, show me you're upset too. I can't sit with this crap anymore. So when you're watching Ron Rivera not talk to the team at halftime, here's a platitude, I'm wearing my feet are, oh my God, shut up, it's so annoying. Like, you're sitting there livid when they're going 4-13 and he's got the same little catchphrase, the same little platitude, the same little cutesy folksy thing where he talks about the same crap for the millionth time over, and it rubs so thin. It rubs you raw. It's not fun. So the point that you just made, I think, is 100% right on. There are certain times, and you're sort of here right now, where you go, please show me the fan, the paying customer, the consumers watching on television, watching the advertising, going to the ball games, to consuming what you are putting out there, that you A, see the same thing that I see, and B, recognize how unacceptable it is. We're in one of those moments. So you're right. I think this Brady House call-up, I don't think they were planning on doing it right now. That's not based on anything other than a slightly strange timing.
Well, I've been checking in with people pretty constantly, and even before this homestand, so this is going back to when they'd been swept by the Mets, they're getting ready to come home and play Miami. And I did a big thing where I had 10 reasons why they should call him up. I thought the time was right going into the Miami series for a soft landing spot. And what I had heard when I was poking around was it sounded like start of July, which is their next homestand, which is when the Tigers were coming to town on July 1. And they were going to kind of wait till then to do it. Now, there's no such thing as a hard and fast as we've seen. Like, everything changes. If Jose Tena goes out and rolls his ankle, then he's up the next night.
Mm-hmm.
They've clearly decided to do it now, I think, for multiple reasons. Number one, it's not the worst thing in the world as a distraction when everybody is screaming and angry and livid and wants people to be fired to say, hey, that prospect that you guys have heard about for years that everybody's excited to see, he's actually going to be up tonight. And I think we'd be naive if we didn't think that was part of this. I mean, Byron led his update today.
Yeah.
And he did his job correctly. I'm not joning on Byron. That's my guy. But Byron led his update with, big night at Nats Park, Brady House is debuting. That's what he should have done.
Right.
But instead of saying the Nats have lost 8 in a row and they're 2-11 this month and Davey Martinez is on the hottest seat that he's been on since he's been here in his 8th season as the manager, like, that is the lead. So that's part of why you do it. But it's not like they called up Luke Dickerson from Fredericksburg, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Brady House has been ready for a few weeks.
It's a name people know.
Could have been up a month ago, and he'll struggle because he's got swing and miss and chase, and he's more hit for power than hit tool, and it's going to be a tough adjustment in the big leagues. But that was going to happen inevitably anyway. So no issue with the call-up, but to your point, people want something. They're like an angry dog, and you need to throw them some meat or something.
Throw them a bone.
And I think the Nats, at least in the case of yesterday, maybe Mike Rizzo felt like, all right, we're making some quote-unquote wholesale changes. Because they did make some roster moves. Jose Tena down, Brady House up. Robert Hassel has one walk and about 70 at-bats. And he looks like a big leaguer to me. He's going to help them. But you got to go refine your approach. You can't walk once out of every 70 mm-hmm. times at the plate.
Yeah.
So you bring up Dalen Lyle after a three-hit game, who's hitting 340 in AAA, and you rearrange that. To me, that's not quite enough. If you were just going to do the player thing, swapping guys in and out, remember Davey had that veiled threat. People don't get the message. We're going to make some changes. We're going to start platooning guys. That was like a week ago.
Yeah.
Maybe this is what he was referencing, but I would have gone further. Their catching position is the worst catching position statistically in baseball this year. K-Bert Ruiz has been bad, and Riley Adams has 5 hits on the season, more than you and I do combined. He's 0 for his last 30. Drew Millis is in AAA. You could have called him up. They didn't do that. So they could have done more than they did. But I think they felt like this is the message. I think fans at this point wanted them to go even further. And one right. of the reasons for that was Davey Martinez's comments after the game on Saturday. Saturday's loss was extra special. A lot of these losses have been painful and annoying. Saturday's was horrendous. I mean, that was infuriating. They played a bad Marlins team
mm-hmm.
that was trying to give them the game.
Everything they could do to get
the entire ninth inning. We're walking, guys. We're committing errors. We have misplays in the field. We're not getting the balls that are popped up in the outfield that we should get to. Like one thing after another. You'd have to set the Marlins defensive inning to a reel that goes with... They're just trying to give the Nationals the game. And the Nationals said, nah, we're good.
Not for us, no.
They get a runner to third to tie the game. They pinch run their fastest player on the bench and maybe their fastest player on the team, Jacob Young. They get a fly ball to medium depth left field, and he's not sent home. Now, if you want to blame Jacob Young for not just going, you could do that. They have a third base coach whose job is to prepare players in that moment. I just think if I'm a pinch runner with wheels and the ball's hit into fairly deep left field, just medium depth left field, I got to try there. Now, James Wood is at the plate coming up, so maybe you don't want to take the bat out of his hands. But Gutierrez, their third base coach, who's had multiple guys thrown out this week, they don't send the runner. It was the second pretty egregious base running issue of that inning where they didn't score and then Wood's out and they lose the game. And so after the game, Davey's going to be asked about that. And I'm not exaggerating. This is not a bit. I had two buddies text me. I was at a recital for Reagan doing some dancing.
She was dancing.
Dance stuff.
Yeah,
but it started 5 minutes after the game.
Mm-hmm.
So like before we walked in the lobby, I'm watching the game MLB.TV on my phone. And I get two texts from people going, I cannot wait to see what Davey says postgame. Davey's press conferences after the game are never relevant. They don't really matter. Like what he's going to say, he's going to say the same thing he said yesterday for the most part. It's not going to be a big deal. But that press conference was important because of the way they lost, the fact that it had been 7 in a row, the fact that you've lost the series to the Marlins now, and the fact that it seemed like there was a pretty big coaching blunder at the end of the game. So there was actual interest in what he was going to say. That's a really bad time to have your worst comment in 8 years as the manager of the team, which is what it was. He picked a really bad spot to put his foot in his mouth. This is what Davey Martinez said.
When you look at the offense as a whole, I think you guys haven't produced like you wanted to this month. For you, how much of that is on the players, on coaching?
It's never on coaching. Never on coaching. Okay, coaches work their asses off every single day. You know, we're not going to finger point here and say it's coaches. It's never on the coaches. Okay, they work hard. The message is clear. All the work is done prior. Sometimes you know they got to go out there and they got to play the game. You know, it's always been about the players. Always. You know, I played this game a long time. Never once have I blamed the coach for anything. I mean, we worked our asses off to get better. They gave us information and we used it. These guys understand what the game is, man. These coaches, I never had such a group of coaches that worked as hard as they do. I mean, they're here freaking diligently. They go over everything. They sit players every day. These coaches, they work their asses off. So, and I know every coach's staff is like that. So,
You know, sometimes, you know, and the players know. Sometimes, you know, you got to put the onus on the players. They got to go out there and they got to play the game and play the game the right way. You know, we can't hit for them. We can't catch the balls for them. We can't pitch for them. We can't throw strikes for them. They got to do that.
Oof. Now, that was taken crazily as if Davey had thrown the players under the bus, understandably. So I got my thoughts on this. I want to hear from you first. Mm-hmm. What did you make of that comment?
Now, he was answering a direct question, okay? Is like an either-or type question. There is a way to do that without basically saying there's two sides to this coin and it ain't one side. You do the math as to which side it is. Listen, I like David Martinez a lot personally. He's been great to us, very gracious. He's a good dude. There's no question that he has been the right guy for a long time and certainly was for that World Series run. I thought that was egregious. I thought that was as big a misstep. That was a window to me into how he feels. His frustration, right? Because he's doing the same positive Peter thing, going 1-0 today, bumpy roads lead to different places that you want to go to, etc. I guarantee you all those coaches are working hard. I'm sorry, that's not good enough, quite frankly. Working hard is the prerequisite. That everybody works hard. What are you producing? What's good? Are they still making the same mistakes? Is it still the same base running issues? Is it still the same you can't get through to a certain player because his approach stinks? Whatever it is, there's a way to do that and make your viewpoint known without running the players under the bus. He actually, to his credit, the next day, he went and said that he spoke to him, tried to translate what he meant, probably frustrated the moment, and guys got his back and everything seemed hunky-dory.
But the next day, he said, I wasn't talking about the players. That wasn't the point. I just said it wasn't the coaches. He says in there, it's always about the players.
100%.
And it was a binary question, yeah. Like, is this a coaching issue? And he said no. For me, look, it was obviously the wrong thing to say. It was a bad thing to say. It was a foot-in-mouth moment. It wasn't as bad as Ron Rivera not knowing that they could be eliminated. But it was like on a reel where you're putting his three or four worst comments at the podium. I don't even know what the others would be. Maybe someone who follows it closer.
Yeah, that was it to me.
This is the one, right? And I think he would admit that. Like, you're not meeting with players the next day if you didn't think you needed to. Mm-hmm. You're supposedly Rizzo and some other guys were around in the clubhouse that normally aren't. They're doing some damage control there because it's something you feel like you got to fix. What I'm so shocked about by that comment, though, is it's the antithesis of what Davey has been. To my frustration for a long time, he has defended more terrible players. He has defended more players who have done terrible things than anybody in baseball over the last 6 or 7 years.
I mean, he always tells you how hard it is. He'll tell you this is the hardest league there is. It's tough.
He played in the big leagues. He's Mr. Defend the Players. So that's why I think people were so shocked by it, is because it's not anything like what he normally does. And herein lies, I guess, my big takeaway. I wrote a piece years ago for The Athletic about Davey Martinez and then 2019 season. It was before they won the World Series and basically the idea of the turnaround. And talking to a lot of players and a lot of coaches and a lot of people around their organization and people with him in Chicago and Tampa and some other places. And what they basically said is Davey Martinez will be successful for two reasons. One, he is always positive. Mm-hmm. The stuff that I roll my eyes at, just as a cynical fat person, is dead serious to him. Like when he's like 1-0 every day, and you know, that is like literally, he's like the guy that has posters on his wall that I would be like, yeah, that's kind of cringeworthy. But like he is a positive person.
And it's not an act.
Not an act at all. It's real. That was not that, right? The other is he never changes. And this is so important with players, is that your manager, when the wolves are at the door and you hear them howling outside, which is happening right now, when the walls are caving in around you, his hand never shakes, right? He never panics. He's the same guy. You wouldn't know it. That's the compliment. That's what happened in 2019. Mm-hmm. That was not that moment. It got to him. You know, he said the thing that you shouldn't say in that moment. Now, everybody wanted him fired for the comment. I don't care about a comment. We are at a place, though, where changes absolutely get made for baseball teams when this is happening. Lest we forget, they kind of brought this on themselves a little bit.
Exactly right.
By pretending like they were ready to win. You and I came back from spring training. We talked about it on IR a bunch. We kept saying, why are they talking about this like they're contending for the wild card, like they're over 500? I didn't buy it. I'm an actions over words guy, okay? I think there are plenty of fans that said, this is not a playoff team. It's the same as when Mike Shanahan says at the podium, I stake my reputation on John Beck. There are still people who hold that against him. He's just saying words. His actions were not that. They didn't start him, by the way. Rex Grossman started. They played him for like two games, right? It's the same as when, like, You see this all the time. He's our quarterback. You trade for a quarterback a week later. Adam Peters came on and told us how good
Emmanuel Forbes
was going to be. This is the gig to some extent. I just think it was an unforced error by them to say we're ready to win and put that pressure out there. I talk to Ryan about this all the time, who does his pod, and he talks to way more fans and is way more engaged with Nats Twitter and stuff than I am. And that is a rallying cry, and something you hear is like, they told us they'd be better. Mm-hmm. I think that was the mistake here. But this is when changes get made. I would not want to be them if this Rocky series does not get better. And if you're asking me, is Davey Martinez on the hot seat? The answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
If you're asking me if Jobs should be on the line over there, the answer is yes. Now, I always make everyone angry because I'm one of those. If I was an owner, I would almost never fire anybody in season because I don't think it helps. I really don't. Unless there's something egregious going on. Would I fire Davey Martinez? Probably not. I would make major changes, though, in terms of the staff. If this series goes badly, I might have already made two, mm-hmm. you know, something. But like, if this goes badly, I would do something. How can you not? You told us you're supposed to win. You're the 2-11 this month, and it's not pretty, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there are times where you have to acknowledge, again, the mob shouldn't rule when you're talking about the long-term view and you have to be the adult in the room. But every once in a while, and this isn't all the time, but something is bad enough where you go, I have to let everyone know that I see it too, and it's not acceptable.
You don't think they did that with some like the mini roster stuff?
No, that's not that.
I tend to agree.
For fans, and it's not fair, but it's like, it's a Darnell Coles thing, for example, where, now here's the deal, I'm not calling for someone's job, I have no idea if he's a good hitting coach or not, but that's not a job you get for job security. You know what I mean? This isn't like a tenured professor gig. If you're a major league hitting coach, you're going to be on the hot seat every time a guy goes 0-2. You know what I mean? Like, that's the deal. I would do something over there. I'd say we have to do something besides swap a couple AAA Timmies for other AAA Timmies. Yeah, it's fun to have Brady House come up, but that ain't it. And that's interesting. I'm intrigued by that. I want to see him play. But this is a whole other level here.
Mike Rizzo was on the station today with the Junkies this morning. Many of you probably have not heard that interview. We've got a few different clips that stood out to us from that discussion, and we're going to go through some of those, react now. If you have a thought as you hear some of these things and want to react, you can do that at 800-636-1067. The Nats have lost 10 in a row as they get ready to play the Rockies tonight. Their longest losing streak in team history is 12. They are in year 5 in a row of being under 500. And I would say they're at least in the fourth year of their rebuild. Although one of the things you're going to hear is when Mike Rizzo suggested maybe that the rebuild has not been going on as long as people think. But let's go through some of these Rizzo answers today. I want to start with the Davey Martinez comments about his players. This was Davey putting his foot in his mouth on Saturday after a loss to the Marlins. He was defending his coaching staff, saying that it's never on the coaches. That means that it's always on the players. That's how it was taken. Mm-hmm. And Rizzo was asked about those comments and what Davey had to say.
Here's my take on that. It's, you know, Dave Martinez is as player-friendly managers I've ever had. You know, he and Dusty Baker, to me, run the clubhouse like no one else I've ever had in my career. So when you talk about, you know, one of the, you know, player managers in the league, Davey's one of them. This guy does 500, 600 interviews a year. You know, he does two a day, pregame, postgame, every time. And, you know, he's flawless. But, yeah, you know, he got caught in a frustrating, frustrating, angry. You know, we were six or seven, eight in a row at that time. And got caught in a frustrated moment and kind of lashed out. And I think it was out of frustration. Here's my take on that situation. There's onus on the players. There's onus on the coaches. There's onus on the manager. And there's a great onus on the general manager to do a better job. We all got to look in the mirror. You lose 10 games in a row. You said at the beginning, it's hard to lose 10 games in a row. I've never lost 10 games in a row. I'm just my 43rd year in professional baseball. I've never lost 10 in a row. It's tough.
I agree with every word of that, by the way. I think he's dead right. I think it's exactly what happened. But my point is there's larger meaning behind it. And what I mean is he and Dusty Baker, I think it's those pretty good comps there in terms of this, are unbelievable at when everybody's shouting like, this guy's on for his last 20. He'll tell you he's going to go 1 for 21. His next at bat, it's going to work out. I'm in your corner. He is as pro player as you're going to find. It's a reason that guys love playing for him. That's why you notice it when that doesn't happen. It's so out of character. It tells you about that boiling pot, and finally the lid blew off, right?
That's actually why the comment felt like a bigger deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was such a departure from years of him doing the opposite, taking guys back, even bad players, sometimes non-big leaguers that were in the big leagues, and suggesting and telling us they're going to be fine, they're good, when we kind of know that's not the case necessarily. But yeah, I agree with Davey being so player-friendly. I always said this about Dusty Baker, who I didn't think was one of the better in-game managers in baseball. He's one of the most decorated, successful managers of all time. Dusty might be the greatest manager in the history of baseball for 21 hours a day, every day. 7 to 10, I'm going to generally disagree with a lot of the things that he does, but there's nobody better running a clubhouse. I think Davey's cut from a similar cloth. Davey's probably an 8 out of 10. For 21 hours a day, managing people, managing players, relating to players, the positivity, all those things. The 7 to 10 part of it, I think he's pretty average. That's not game to game, decision to decision. That's not going to be his strength. And so I agree with Rizzo when he says, this is a pro player guy who said something that was anti-player, and it's very, very uncommon and odd for him to do that. But I really liked what Rizzo said, which is, frankly, what Davey should have said, and Rizzo, much calmer, sitting at home in the morning on his cell phone, not after a loss, and with a lot of time to think and prepare, said, the onus is on the players, the manager, the coaches,
everybody,
and the GM, putting himself in the conversation as well. But yeah, that was a really good answer, I thought. And I'll just go back to that comment, while a mistake and bad, it just doesn't matter that much to me. Like, should Davey be here? Shouldn't he? What changes should they make? All that dialogue has almost nothing to do with that comment to me. It's about baseball, the losing, the development. Is the message still getting through? I don't care about that comment. It was a dumb comment. So what? Like, I'm not firing a guy because of a comment.
See, I'm trying to quantify it. And I know I think I'm different than you on it. To me, it's you're right. If I'm just judging the comment, I go, that's a frustrated guy. And Mike Rizzo pointed out, let's say he's talked 1,000 times. That's 998 really good ones. And 2 times where he probably didn't say the right thing. That's a pretty good shooting percentage, right? I'll take that on my manager every time. To me, it's a bigger deal because it suggests something simmering. Like, a guy that doesn't do that, doing that, means something more to me. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what. I want to ascribe something to it. I want to give some blame. I want to give some reasons. I want to give some causes. But whatever, just the fact that he said what he said within 2 weeks, again, this is, I refuse to separate them. The other comment about the players indirectly, we're going to have benchings. We're going to have platoons. We're going to have to change things. We're going to change things that these guys don't get it. And then 2 weeks later, he's going, it ain't on the coaches. Tells me something, that whether it's they don't have the right guys, or he doesn't think they have the right guys, or he's frustrated with certain young people that he's not allowed to move on from because of organizational hamstringing or something. Again, I don't know what it is, but I know it's something. And I'm sitting there with my metal detector on the beach. I'm looking for a beep. I got, you know what I mean? Like, that gave me the trail or the sniff of red meat, and I'm the dog looking for it.
Davey was, Rizzo was asked point blank about Davey's future and whether or not he's going to be fired or should be fired. The question was asked, does this have any lurch in here, or is this just Rizzo? Okay, so to set it up, Bishop asked, look, there have been 3 other situations where managers got fired. The Pirates blew out their skipper. So did the Orioles, and so did the Rockies. It's not that crazy that you would fire a manager when things aren't going well. We've seen it in 3 other cities. And those teams caught some shrapnel from Mike Rizzo as he answered the question and defended Davey Martinez.
Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh hasn't won a World Series since We Are Family. Colorado's never won a World Series. And Baltimore, Davey Johnson was the last guy who won a World Series with Baltimore. This guy is proven through trials and tribulations that he can handle a roster, he can handle a veteran laden team, and he's developing at the big league level. And my track record is I have fired managers in midseason, I have fired managers after season, I have fired coaches midseason, I fired coaches after the season. We're all being evaluated. You know, we all got to look ourselves in the mirror. And we are at a point right now where we're moving forward with our development of these young kids. I think Davey still has the pulse of the clubhouse. He's a great clubhouse presence, and he's a calming presence. And I think that once we get through this thing and win a couple of games, which we will, that we can right the ship and continue progressing towards winning a championship, whenever that is.
So here's my translation to that in a lot fewer words. I think not only in that answer, but throughout the conversation today, it's very, very clear that the World Series win still looms so large to Rizzo.
Mm-hmm.
He feels like with Davey and just organizationally, the Nats are different. They deserve a little bit more credibility. They deserve a little bit more leeway. They deserve a little bit more patience because we brought you a title. That was a reoccurring theme, I thought, and you just heard it there when asked about the Pirates. They've never won anything since the We Are Family team. The Rockies don't have a pelt on the wall like we do. Now, the Orioles, Cal Ripken Jr. was their shortstop, and he was 23 years old when they won a championship. And that's kind of the tone of Davey Martinez is a World Series champion you're asking about now. Put some respect on his name. But my translation of what he actually said was, I'm not afraid to fire guys during the season. I've done it. We are always evaluating the results. But in this situation, we have a guy that has won us a title, that has not lost the team, and who is still a net positive. Now, these are not my words. I think that's what Mike Rizzo just said. I've got thoughts on that, but I want to hear yours.
Yeah, to me, I didn't love the other organizations haven't won anything. Well, you've got one more win or a couple more wins in the Rockies over this same time frame. So I wouldn't necessarily.
The last 5 years, the Nats are second to last in baseball, only better than Colorado in wins.
I wouldn't want to invite a ton of comparisons. I'll say that. But yeah, the Pirates haven't won anything. Is that because they fired managers or because they don't spend? I mean, the Phillies haven't won a World Series in a long time. They're doing pretty well, though. I would take their position over yours. So that, whatever. That was my first thought. But the second one was, my takeaway from that statement or those set of statements was, I've fired guys before if it's warranted.
It's not warranted.
It's not warranted. That was the ipso facto to me. That was the conclusion. Or you could translate a different way, more cynically, it wouldn't help anything. This wouldn't change anything. We're actually doing what we want here. I gave him a pile of turds, and he's shining up the players that are worth the damn. Like, the kids are doing what they're supposed to do. The rest of this ain't special.
The second part of his answer very clearly to me was, he's not part of the problem. Or he's not the reason we're losing. He's going to help. He's still a net positive, not a negative. But the first part, I think, was actually more important and more telling, believe it or not, which was he basically said he won us a World Series. He won a championship. We know he can do it. He's done it before.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard Rizzo say that about the rebuild, say that about himself, say that about the front office. Like, we've won titles. Now, what was interesting is when they asked about the staff later on, like other non-Davey changes, the tone is kind of the same. Like, these guys have done it, which is not true, actually. Not here. They haven't won anything here. None of these guys were here when you won a championship. Not one of the members of Davey's staff currently in the roles that you guys care about, hitting coach, pitching coach, you know, the guys you see on the field, coaching the base paths when you're sitting in the crowd. None of them were in those roles when the Nats won a World Series. All right, let's go to the next cut here. Rizzo defending the rebuild and how long it's taking. So this, I believe, is where he suggested that it started in 2022. Now, this I'm going to have to take pretty considerable issue with because they traded over a half dozen players in 2021 in a major sell-off. That's when they traded, and he does circle back and say they kickstarted it with the Scherzer-Turner deal. But that was not the only trade. They traded Yan Gomes. They traded Josh Harrison. They traded Going back to that time, I think Brad Hand,
Schwarber,
bunch of their relievers. I think they made probably 7 or 8 trades, all selling, none buying in 2021. So the deadline of 2021 was truly when the rebuild began, the 2021 season, which means you've suffered as a fan base through the 21 half season where all the good players went away, 22, 23, 24, and now this is 25, which is the fifth year. The Junkies asked it, I believe, as this is the fifth year of the rebuild. And he said, actually, I think of it as when we traded Juan Soto in 22 as the start of the rebuild. Well, then what was 21 with the major sell-off is what I would ask.
Is that the tear down? You could play semantics with that say that.
Okay, maybe that's a fair answer.
Because, I mean, think of the Wizards, what they said, right? We're like, we can't rebuild yet. We have to tear down the old thing. We're in the tear down phase. I don't know if they use those words, but that was the implication.
Okay, but if the rebuild is different than the tear down, then the rebuild, if he's describing it as like when we got young big leaguers that are good, so Gore, maybe he's going to say Ruiz or whatever. CJ Abrams came over in that deal. I guess that's possible, but it is just semantics.
Yeah.
The reason for the idea of how long the rebuild's taking and how restless the fan base is the number of years that if I'm a season ticket holder, I've been paying gargantuan prices to see a losing team.
Yeah. At no discount, I'm seeing bad baseball.
2020, the pandemic, I didn't get to go to the games. I think toward the end of the year, they had like 5,000 fans there or something in some lottery. But that was a really disappointing, good, well-put-together team that was sub-500. But 21, 22, 23, 24, and now 25, it's 5 straight years of being under 500. But this was Davey when asked about, this is not just about 10 games, I think was the way Cakes phrased it. Mm-hmm. Like the losing streak we're talking a lot about today, for a lot of people, this is about 5 years.
When you look at it, we had 8 years of great success, 12 to 19, 4 division titles and the world championship in that mix, and then we had to rebuild. The rebuild, in my mind, didn't start till we traded Juan Soto in July of 2022. I guess in 2021, Max and Trey were traded, so that was the kickstart of it. But I think we're into this thing three and a half years. The rebuild before when I took over in 2009 to winning the division title in 2012 took three plus years. This one's going to take a little bit longer. But all these rebuilds aren't linear, and landscapes change, injuries happen, player performance it doesn't develop as on schedule as you would like. But I think when you see, the 4 or 5 young position players we have and the 2 or 3 young starting pitchers we have and the 3 or 4 bullpen guys that we have, they're all young, controllable players that are going to develop with us and learn with us and learn how to win. And when we get to the time where we're ready to win, hopefully we'll invest in the roster and make some moves to put us over the top.
So a couple of things here.
Yeah.
Number one, he talks about the first rebuild and how much quicker it was. Here's what he can't say. They spent money that time. So the part that Mike and the front office control, and we could talk about the historical drafts and development, which we've talked about a million times, that have to be better and over the last couple of years have. But just specific to the rebuild, the part that they control, having the young, affordable, cheap, controllable talent, they have done brilliantly. Now, it's basically a couple of trades, and it's mostly the Soto deal, if we're being honest. Mm-hmm. But you've also supplemented with Dylan Cruz being number 2 overall and Brady House being number 11 overall. But you're now positioned in a pretty good spot with a starting pitcher in Gore, Soto deal, leading the big leagues in strikeouts. James Wood, superstar, should be an all-star. CJ Abrams, very good player, could be an all-star for the second time. Brady House, who just got called up, hopefully ends up helping them. Dylan Cruz is going to be a really, really good major leaguer for a long time. Like, that's a very solid core. They did their part. But you have to supplement and add with money. Ownership is not. They were supposed to this offseason. They didn't. 9-11, they signed Jason Wirth during that time for $126 million. You look at that roster they had, in addition to the kids, that core at that time, their young guys.
Zimmerman, Desmond, Jordan Zimmerman.
Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg, the guys they had drafted. That was like their Cruz and their Wood or whatever. Mm-hmm. They had Adam LaRoche, who was 32 years old, who cost real money. They had Mike Morse, who at that time cost some money, who was 30 years old. It was a completely different situation. Yes, you had homegrown Jordan Zimmermann in Strasburg, and you'd hit on a couple of trades like Gio Gonzalez, but you also went out and spent real money on Edwin Jackson. They haven't spent that kind of money via today's numbers on anybody to supplement. They haven't brought in relievers at the same rate like Mike Gonzalez, or just trying to think about that roster, Sean Burnett, or whoever it is.
Right.
Like it was a completely different thing because they actually spent money while they developed the young talent. Now you only do the other part without any of the money.
Well, my big pullout from that one in terms of quotes was, when we're ready to win. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait. You told everybody you were ready. So if I'm a fan and I heard that, and I am a fan and I heard that, I went, well, what the hell was all that then? We spent all the time before the season started. This offseason happened, and a lot of people were disappointed. A lot of homers saw some kind of silver lining that some of us didn't see. Whatever. Point is, we were told this group right now is ready to win. I think that's why a lot of fans are so upset.
I agree.
Is that's not happening. You're the fourth worst record in the National League, and it's going south, and 7 out of 9 of your regular position players have below average OPS, slugging percentage, on-base percentage, et cetera, every single night. So no wonder you're not winning. You told us you were ready to win, and now you're saying, well, whenever that happens, hopefully we'll spend money. Oh, my God.
So the
panic
word,
button.
The word hopefully.
Yeah.
But the whole sentence.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you. One of my big antenna moments was, when we're ready to win. This was the we're ready to win year.
Yes.
And maybe not. Maybe he means win, like win big in the playoffs, whereas this year, they were ready to turn a corner, be over 500. You know, they said, we're ready to win. And we all kind of knew what that meant. They're ready to compete
ready
for
to
the
compete
wild
a little
card.
Bit. Yeah, sure.
Isn't happening right now, obviously. 10 days ago, maybe a little bit different story. But right now, that's certainly not the case. And it doesn't look like it will be this season. But my bigger takeaway from that sentence was the word hopefully. In that, Mike Rizzo, who's the president of baseball operations, sounded like me talking about ownership. When I, for the entire last 2 calendar years, said, hopefully, in the offseason before 2025, they will spend. And everyone said, of course they will. Of course. I and so many of you listening were so patient. No reason to spend right now, offseason after offseason, when the team's bad, to bring in a free agent on a 3-4-5-year deal that would then be only a year or 2 or 3 left by the time you actually did start winning, if you did it correctly in 2025. Why would you do that? Wait till this past offseason, spend good money, bring in quality players, have a better big league roster. And I guarantee you Rizzo and people over there probably thought that's what's going to happen. And then it didn't. But for him today, when he talks about the future, to say, hopefully, play just the end of that clip again, if you would. Like, I thought that was a huge comment there. When we're ready to win, hopefully we spend. Hopefully?
I mean, I don't.
Hopefully, he didn't say the word spend, but hopefully we bring in
players. We'll bring in players, which means spend money on players.
But hopefully.
Yeah. Like
that is like a beep, 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 beep. It tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I was in my car this morning and my jaw dropped. The rest of it, I don't think he meant all these things necessarily, but this was one of those times, as I said earlier, the analogy I used was, is Captain America swatting everything aside with his shield?
Yes.
Right there, his shield was down. And I saw like behind the scenes and I went, oh my God, I see the wire.
Hopefully. That's a great line.
You know what I mean?
Hopefully they're going to bring in players.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Oh no.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Like he's going, I don't know. Hopefully. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Maybe for true, a number comes in and we can spend on some people.
Now I can spin 2 plates here. I know that fans heard them say they were ready to compete,
mm-hmm.
and they took that to heart, and they're mad. And you should be, and you're allowed to be.
Yeah.
It's why I thought it was an unforced error. I've said that more on these airwaves than anybody else.
We both did.
It was an unforced error. I totally get it. This is where I sometimes get myself in a little hot water, though, with fans who want to hear something that I'm just not willing to say. I don't believe what is said. I don't take it gospel. Mm. I believe in actions, not words. The actions were not the same as their words. If you really thought you were ready to win, you would have gone out and signed a Christian Walker. You would have gone out and signed an outfielder who could hit home runs so Dylan Cruz could play center and Jacob Young could be your fourth outfielder. You would have signed a starting pitcher so you weren't just hoping that Michael Soroka could be a number 5. You would have added to the bullpen with real relievers so you didn't have to look in the $5 DVD bin for Lucas Sims and Colin Poche and the ghost of Jorge Lopez. You didn't do it. So in my mind, when they said it, I'm going, they're setting themselves up here. This is bad. But I can't go to a listener or a fan or a season ticket holder or someone who's spending good money over at the park and go, oh, you're overreacting. You shouldn't have been listening to them. What? You've got to.
Yeah.
I can just tell you the story, and I always do, about Mike Shanahan. You still hate the comment Mike made about staking his reputation on Beck and Grossman. You still hate that. He said it, and 5 minutes later, I bump into him, and I'm like, you really think they're that good? And he's like, no.
No.
He's like, I got to put my, you know, I got to have faith in them. I got to put my name behind them, you know, in publicly so that they know I'm behind them. But he knew what they were, but everyone thinks that, you know, he thought John Beck was going to be great. So I get that. I just don't do it that way. I'm an actions guy. But they set themselves up for sure. And that is part of the anger for the fan base. And it's 1,000% understandable. But hopefully, Danny, on the way out, play that. Hopefully. What a word. What a damaging.
Doing a lot of lifting. Or depressing in this case.
What a heartbreaking word.
Yeah.
I could either hear this clip again or I could get kicked in the shins.
Hopefully.
Which one?
Hopefully do.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.